So tonight on Experience the Big Book, we're starting on page 100. We're going to finish the chapter Working with Others. This chapter has so much information in it. Every time I read it, I see new things. And I studied it today, and I saw a lot of things that I don't know if I saw before. New words are in the book. I don't plan this. I don't have a lecture notes, so I don't know what I said the last time we did it. But let's see what we can get out of it tonight. We're going to start on page 100 with the paragraph, "Both you and the new man must walk day by day." This may be the most powerful paragraph for me in the big book. Whenever I'm in self-pity, I don't get there too much anymore, or stewing about something, I just go back to this paragraph and it gets me right out of it. It says, "Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress." Notice it doesn't say somebody's leading the new man, they're walking together hand in hand. We tend to think of sponsorship as a horizontal relationship, but it truly should be vertical. We should be together. Nobody's better than anybody else. We're all just trusted servants of God. But the sponsor's role is to help take the person down the path that they took. So if you haven't done the path, then you don't know where to take them. One of the reasons I started this meeting is so that people would know the path. They'd take the path and they'd be able to help somebody else. And you might ask yourself, what path are you walking down today? Are you walking the path of spiritual progress? Think about your day-to-day and what you're trying to do each day. Because here's a promise. If I persist in doing this, remarkable things will happen. Well, we already heard tonight, after just 30, 60 days, remarkable things are already happening. And it keeps getting better and better. And I like this line. It applies to me. And I think of it whenever I'm down at all. I say, when I look back, I realize the things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Powerful, and it's so true. When I think back to that moment of complete defeat, and then I'd be here years later doing this meeting, reading this page, who would have thought? And it says, the things which came to me. That's another spiritual word. I didn't learn it. It just came. The things which come. Remember the promises. They talk about things just come. You know, your things will suddenly appear, right? And so came is a spiritual term. Things just came and came to me, and better than anything I could have planned. And I think back to things that I've had some stresses in these years of recovery. And who could have thought the way they worked out? I would never have thought at the time how things would. My son died, 9 years ago. Who would have thought that because of that I'd be doing these big book meetings, and 1,200 or 1,300 meetings later we'd be here tonight studying the book. Follow the dictates of a higher power. This is a strong suggestion. Follow the dictates of a higher power. That means your creator. And I will presently live in a new and wonderful world. Anybody want that? And it says presently, like in the now. We're going to be presently in a new and wonderful world all the time. So if I'm following the dictates of God each day, the world will always be wonderful because I'll be in the now with God. And then here's what they mean, no matter what my present circumstances. So no matter what's going on out there, if I'm in the moment right now with my Creator, it'll be okay. And so I really know that's true for me. So then my whole goal is to stay in the moment with my Creator. And then steps 10, 11 is how I try to do that every day. It says, when working, well, there's something wrong with my voice tonight. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. Good idea. In fact, you could take that at, in any situation. You may spoil your chance of being helpful if you do. And we talk a lot about what's my role. My role is to play the role God assigned, right? And stay close to Him. That's the contract I made in the third step, and then He'll provide everything I need, right? So my role is to be helpful in everything I do. And we talk about that. It's in here in the next few paragraphs. But urge upon a man's family that he has been a very sick person. Anybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. And should be treated accordingly. You should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. you should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. I wrote that I don't know if they're ever going to disappear, but we try not to practice them, right? We try to practice a new way. We have our card here, the left and right hand side. We all have a personality characteristics of the self-centered person, but we try not to practice that anymore. We try to stop and pause and have God change the way we see things. Show them that he has entered upon a period of growth. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to grow in strength and understanding, right? And effectiveness in the world of the spirit. Ask them to remember when they are impatient, the blessed fact of his sobriety. And blessed means enjoying the bliss of heaven. We're blessed. We are all blessed to be sober today. Sometimes we take that for granted, those who've been around a while, but it is a gift that we're all here alive and we're not dying today. And I like what she said, you know, that it's a whole new way of looking at things. And it's a gift. Remember that moment of defeat. Even 30 days is a gift. But then you get the grace of God, you get humbled enough to let him in, and you get your 30 or 60 days. But after a while, that will wear off. And unless you do this and you learn the steps to unblock the things from you and your higher power, then nothing's going to change. So it's a good beginning, but then it has to be followed by this program of action, I believe. If you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, probably you should ask your domestic other if you have been. That's a joke, by the way. Tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished. So you shouldn't give advice, but if you've had a similar situation, how you handled it. We're not supposed to be advisors here. We're only supposed to share our experience. Some things I haven't had experience in, so I can't give advice or anything. I don't have that experience. But if you've had that experience, share your experience. That's what this book is. It's their experience and what they did to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. In this way, you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism. And it is. It's powerful if you're able to show how you've overcome your own situations, and so things are better now. That's a powerful testimony. Now, and this is a really powerful, we're going to talk about alcohol and being around alcohol. And I still remember the meeting this year in this room around Christmas, and they were talking about how people should handle the holidays and alcohol. And they had all sorts of theories. This one says you hold a glass and you have a driver and you blah, 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 blah. And people with years of recovery, and I'm saying, gee, just read these two pages. Because here's what it tells you about you and alcohol as an alcoholic. It says, assuming we are spiritually fit. So what does spiritually fit mean to you? What does it mean to be spiritually fit? Well, the book tells you that you'll react sanely to alcohol if you're in a fit spiritual condition. And a fit spiritual condition, to me in the book, means that you're in contact with your Creator, and you have a relationship with your Creator, and you're in the now with your Creator. And if you're in the now with your Creator, then alcohol has no power over you. And you'll react differently if you're in fit spiritual condition than you will if you're not. For an example, if you're not in fit spiritual condition, you might go into Hy-Vee and get all pissed off waiting in line. And if you're in fit spiritual condition, you may just stand there. It's a silly example, but it's true. And so we react differently when we're in a fit spiritual condition. And the whole idea, the steps is 1 through 9, is to get you into a fit spiritual condition that you try to maintain every day and every minute. And it's moment by moment, as somebody says. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. I think I do have liquor in my home, but I just haven't noticed. I think it's in the refrigerator. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. I love that. You couldn't watch TV anymore. Couldn't watch a ball game. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience, this is their experience, shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. We're not to be afraid of seeing alcohol anymore. Why? They tell you. An alcoholic who cannot meet these conditions, who can't be around alcohol, who can't see it, there's something the matter with his mind. He still has an alcoholic mind. So what does it mean to have an alcoholic mind? It means that you can't see the truth about alcohol. You don't have a relationship with your creator that gives you a power to say, bad idea. And you get that power through working the steps. And so if you still have an alcoholic mind, how can you tell? You're worried about going to a place where there's alcohol. You're afraid to be around it. You're afraid to see it. If you're in that state, then you still have an alcoholic mind. Alcohol still has power over you. But if you work these steps, then you no longer have an alcoholic mind. You know what they called that? Recovered. You hear it's men and women who have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. When you're recovered, it just means that you don't have that obsession over alcohol, and you can see it and look at it, and you can say, bad idea. Now, that's a fleeting condition, being recovered. It's not a permanent condition. You don't get a badge and say you're recovered. You have to stay recovered all the time through working the steps. And if you're in fit spiritual condition, then you're recovered, and then you don't have an alcoholic mind. You see how the steps all tie together? And so there's something, and he says it, there's something the matter with the spiritual status. What is it? It's that you're still separated from your creator. You're still living in self. And so we don't want to be there anymore. That's why it's great to be here and be new and celebrate our 30 and 60 days. But experience has told us that condition may not last unless you follow through with this program of recovery. We get a gift. We get a grace, all of us. Everybody who comes in here sober tonight, some are going to stay, some aren't. And we're all given that grace. Now, what do we do with it? You see, and that's why they took the people through the steps very quickly in the old days. They didn't mess around, because without God, you have no power. This is all about lack of power. We have no power not to drink, and I have to find a relationship with my Creator that gives me His power so that He gives me the choice not to drink. A lot of people come in here and they think, we're getting sober. I've been sober while I have the choice to drink. Well, that's never true. I don't have the choice to drink or not today. I'm an alcoholic. But I have a choice to seek the power that gives me the choice. So I sought God today. And if I'm with God, I won't drink. So if I ever think that I have the choice of alcohol and drinking, then I'll say, well, I don't need to go to the meetings, and I don't read the big book, and I don't need to pray. I'm okay. The ego rebuilds quickly. But alcoholic never has the power of choice to drink, ever, on his own without God. I don't think we emphasize that enough. Why is this book all about God and our relationship with God? Because we have a lack of power. Anybody remember that? We read How It Works. What is the how and how it works? How do we get the power? How do we find the power? It says on 45, we have to find the power to live, right? And that's our dilemma. We don't know how to find it. And the book says we're going to tell you where it is in chapters of the Gnostics and how to find it and how it works. It says his only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. I don't think that would work. It's not a nice place to live anyway. Even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problems. And people have made a lot of changes, decisions, because they're going to change and it's going to be different. The problem is wherever you go, you're going with your alcoholic mind. You can't escape your mind. In our belief, and this is any scheme of combating alcoholism, and a scheme I wrote is a making plans, especially in a devious way. So if you have a scheme of combating alcoholism, which proposes the shield, and the shield is a piece of armor that protects him. So you're going to put a piece of armor around the sick alcoholic, right, to keep him from temptation is doomed to failure. They don't say it may not work. It's doomed to failure. It's not going to work. The thing you have to realize, I realize it now when I sponsor people, I realize it about myself, I have no power to keep anyone from drinking. I only have the ability to show them how to find that power that would do what I did. There's no scheme that's going to combat alcoholism. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, so he's going to shield himself, he's going to put a piece of armor around himself to protect himself from. Now think about it. The alcoholic is going to shield himself from an inert liquid in a bottle. Think about it. You walk into a restaurant, you're going to wear a suit of armor to protect you from something that's in a bottle. It sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? But we can all relate to that. He may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. And then I wrote, we all have these things that they're shield. Have you ever heard of triggers? Relapse prevention? I laugh every time I hear that. You're gonna have triggers. Like, you're gonna know what the trigger is? See, an alcoholic, a trigger to drinking alcohol for an alcoholic is being alive, is breathing. And having your mind, if you're not under sedation and your mind's working, you've got triggers going on. And group therapy, I mean, those are good. I understand that. But there's no relapse prevention. You can't prevent the relapse by thinking it through, because your mind is the one that's going to tell you to get a drink. And remember, your willpower won't work because your mind can't tell you alcohol is bad right before you drink it. Now, why do you do that? Why don't you say bad idea? Because you can only think what it's going to do for you, not to you. And when an alcoholic decides that he wants a drink, nothing's going to change that. Nothing can come between you and the drug or alcohol except God. So we're in fit spiritual condition when we have something between me and the first drink. And it can't be my mind. My mind is alcoholic. It has to be God. Does this make sense? And it says, like they talked about self-knowledge. Remember, Bill had self-knowledge. He understood the inner workings of his mind perfectly. And he was drunk the next day. Then he had fear. Anybody have fear? Fear can't keep you sober. And so the only thing that keeps us sober is a relationship with our Creator, a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. That's why I think it's so important that we study this book, because this is the path that they took. It says, so our rule, here's their rule, is not to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. So ask yourself, do you have a legitimate reason for going anywhere? And if you do, and I tell people who are new, I say, bring your coins, put some coins in your pocket, go wherever you want, hold the coins, you've got God, you don't have to drink. Think about that. If you take God with you in any situation, you'll be okay. And even if you're new, you still got those coins, take God with you, take your sponsor's number. That's not a scheme, that's just power. You're bringing power into your situation. That includes bars, nightclubs, dances, receptionists, weddings, and even whoopee parties. I didn't look up whoopee party. I didn't want to know what it was. To a person who has had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. But here's an important qualification. See, these are important pages for new people to read. These are important pages for people to see, because we're always worried about alcohol. Alcohol is not the problem. It's the symptom of our spiritual illness. And if we're spiritually fit, alcohol has no power over us. And it says, therefore ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such a places? And remember the powerful story about Jim and more about alcoholism. Jim was a car salesman. And he came in on Tuesday morning. He missed Monday. Guess why? And he came in on Tuesday, and he was mad at his boss, because he used to own the place, and now he's working for his boss. And then he said he's going to go out to the country to sell a car. And he knew there was a nice bar there that had really good sandwiches. And he went into the bar. See how his relapse was planned? He was in a bad mood. He was irritated. He was restless and discontent. He went to the bar, and then he says, it's in italics, the idea of taking whiskey with milk made sense. He said, I thought it was not too wise, but he did it anyway. That's how our mind works. So, and vicarious means experience through the imagination. So you're already experiencing the drink before you've drunk when you're going to these places, you see? Your mind will work that way. And here what I wrote is, we're trying to shield ourselves, and I wrote, God is this shield. And it's impossible. No other human power can relieve this, remember? And so I have to remember that. It's true for all of us all the time. If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure you're on solid spiritual ground before you start. If you're not on solid spiritual ground, don't go. Mm-hmm. You know, don't put yourself in a situation where you're not fit to handle it. But then keep working the steps, and after time you will. I go on a lot. Used to go on a lot of these cruises where it was all you could drink, and I wouldn't even notice the alcohol. I'd be on the ship for like 2 weeks, and like the last night, I'd say, "Gee, you know, they ask for wine. They just know I don't drink, and this and that. You just don't even notice it. It doesn't bother you." I must admit, I didn't like it when people played with their drinks. You know how they do that, and they whirl it around and they go like this over it. I didn't know what that was, but we're not going to get into that tonight. But you see, it just does. It's not part of my life. There's nothing in that bottle could make my day better. And if you can say that if you're in fit spiritual condition, nothing alcohol could do for me today that would make my day better. I know that. But if I don't do this, there'll be a day will come when the idea will sound good, and I don't want that to happen to me. So that's why I work the steps. That's why when it says we wake up, what do? We make our plans for the day, right? But before we begin, what are we supposed to do? We're to ask God to direct my thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-centered motives. Page 85. So I do that in the morning. Why do I do it first thing? Because I know I'm an alcoholic. I need help today. And if my thinking's connected to God, then I'll be okay. And then step 10 is where I look all day when my thinking isn't with God and how I can get back to God so I don't have to get irritable, restless, discontent, and seek the ease of comfort. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. Now, we're always talking about what do we bring, the St. Francis prayer. What are we bringing into every situation? What are we bringing into our day? So if you're going to one of these situations, ask what you're going to bring into it. But if you're shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. It says, why sit with long face in places where there's drinking, sighing about the good old days? I don't know what they're talking about. It would only be good old days if you still had an alcoholic mind. You see, if you could think about how good it was, you know, maybe you need to think about that. Because there was nothing good about my life before I came in here. Really, when you think about it, because I was selfish, self-centered, harmed a lot of people, made a lot of decisions based on self. We all did. And we weren't bad people. Remember, what was our problem? None of us are bad. We had the wrong director. I directed my life. I should have fired myself years ago. And I kept firing everybody else, you see, but it was me. And it's a spiritual disease, like Dawn said. Why sit with long faces? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those people there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you're a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. And you know what? You don't really have to do that either. You just say you don't drink. You don't have to go in any great detail. You don't have an excuse. You don't have to explain yourself. You just say alcohol. If people ask me, I say alcohol is not part of my life. I don't drink. It doesn't do anything for me. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Anybody do that? We isolated ourselves. Even if we were around people, we were withdrawing in our mind, right? We were separating ourselves from the world. It was a lonely place. Remember in a vision for you, it says you're at the jumping off point. You can't live with it, can't live without it. It says, now you're getting into the social life of the world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. You need to be part of things, part of something, not separated from. Your job now, here it is. This is a powerful line. It's not read at many meetings. It should be. My job now is to be at the place where I may be of maximal helpfulness to others. That's my role. That's what I get out of AA. And that ties into my other favorite page. I've got about 180 favorite pages in this book. On page 77 at the top, it says, at the moment, I'm trying to put my life in order, on page 77. But this is not an end in itself. Here's my real purpose, is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's what we're trying to do here, trying to put my life in order. But my purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service. And I always read it as I'm going to be of maximum service, but no, I have to be fit myself. Well, how do I fit myself? I do my 10th and 11th step. I do my prayer and meditation. I inventory. I try to stay connected to my higher power to fit myself, and then I can serve. And so this place where I may be of maximum helpfulness to others. And it's not where you may be of maximum help, but at the place. Are you in a place spiritually where you can do that? Are you practicing love, patience, kindness, tolerance, kindness, consideration? Are you practicing selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear? You see? And it says, you should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. You can really go anywhere with your coins and God. You can go anywhere. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Isn't that a great promise? Look at that. You're in the firing line of life with these motives. You can do anything, any situation at work, any situation in life. You can go through any tragedy. God will keep you unharmed. He'll stay with you. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. We often need to carry green recruits through a severe hangover. Remember, they worked one-on-one. They went to the houses. You know, they worked with people. You know, they went out. They didn't wait for the meeting for people to come in. It was a different world then. They went, the family would call them, the wives would call them and say, please come and help my husband. And they'd go out to the house and they'd help him. They even used to take him to treatment. Sponsorship in AA in the beginning made that you paid for the treatment. You paid for their hospital bill because they didn't have any money. The other thing sponsor was, it was an Axford Group term, and it meant that you sponsored the new person to come into the meeting and be part of the group. We have a different kind of nation now, but sponsor really to me is just means teacher, means guider, pathfinder, somebody to share the road with, because we can't do it alone, right? And it says, we are careful to never show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. I have to remember to not show intolerance or hatred of anything. Remember, love and tolerance is our code of living. Remember on page 84 in the 10th step? So I don't want to show intolerance or hatred of anything. But unfortunately, we all do at some point. You know, we get judgmental or we have opinions. But we don't want to be intolerant or hateful of anything. And here's why. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. So if I'm in an intolerant or hateful mood, people around it are going to know it. And I'm not going to be helpful to them. And with that attitude, I'm going to make things worse. Try it out. Be intolerant or hateful with people tomorrow and see how they react to you. And then try to be love and tolerant and see how they react to you. See how you feel. See if your day goes better. You know, remember, whenever we're intolerant or hateful, we're supposed to stop and ask God to remove it at once. Remember? In the 10th step. Every new alcoholic looks for the spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. We don't care if other people drink, do we? It's not our business. It has nothing to do with us, right? And we're not supposed to tell anybody that they're an alcoholic, but we can if we have to, it says in the book. But all we do is tell them to keep drinking and see how it is and see if it still works. And the big book says tell them to keep drinking and then see if it works and be sure that we're here when they're ready. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved. We shouldn't be intolerant of new people. We're no different than them. We've just been able to have God come into our lives. We're not better than anybody. People go in, go out. You hear people, oh, he went out, like, oh my, he's a bad one. Well, no, he's just alcoholic. We could be there. And so we never want to get judgmental of other alcoholics. We're all in this together. None of us are better. We're just, the ones in here tonight should just get down on your knees tonight before you go to bed and thank God for being here in AA and for thank God for having a sober day, really. And then just keep doing the deal. And then the other thing it says is work with other alcoholics, and that'll be the best thing you can do to keep from drinking. We could not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. Now remember, they asked alcoholics' opinion. They were supposed to testify in Congress in the 50s, and they called AA and they said, we're studying alcohol. We want to put a warning label on alcohol bottles. And they said they would, that if you'd come down and talk to Congress, because they thought we'd know a lot about it. So they sent him a letter saying, we have no opinion on anything. we're AA, but we suggest you put a warning label, this bottle will run out. I mean, I don't know if anybody gets it, but I mean, really? Warning, if you're an alcoholic, this body, yeah, all right. Suddenly, we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, but we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness or hostility. What we really have is hope for the alcoholics. This book was a message of hope. There was no solution. That's why I feel so strongly about this book. Meetings are great, but the path to God is in this book. Before this, there was no solution. Now, if you have another solution that works, that's fine. But if you don't, try this. All AA is saying, we don't care what you think of this. We don't care if you like it. We don't care if you agree with it. This is our experience. But if you don't have a plan for your life and things are going really bad, try this and tell us what happens. See, AA doesn't tell you what your experience is going to look like. They just say, do it and tell us. And they're telling us other experience, and I'm telling you my experience. And so that's what we're supposed to share at meetings, is our experience for the newcomer, so they'll want to do this. And we're supposed to give hope to them. And then here's the final paragraph. Now, this is page 103. These are the final instructions on the program of recovery. The following chapters are to wives, employers, vision for you, good stuff. But this is how they end the instructions on the path to God. And it says, after all, our problems were of our own making. And on page 62, you don't have to turn there, I'll read it to you. It says, selfish is self-centeredness. That is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we stepped on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, this is true for me, I have made decisions based on self which later placed us in a position to hurt. And it says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot. Now, that's probably the greatest promise in the big book, that my trouble is of my own making. Why would I say that? Because if the troubles are of my own making, it's not them. I don't have to change anything out there. I just have to change me. And if I do that, then the problems will change, the world will change. Bottles were only a symbol of what? A symbol of our separation from God, living a life run on self-will, right? And living a life where we couldn't live in the world sober. I'll say one last thing. I'll probably say more than one, but a few things, I'm almost done. Alcoholism is a disease of sober. It's not a disease after you're drunk. Alcoholism is a disease of people who are sober. What happens after you drink is the effect of alcohol, but we can't live sober in the world. And then alcohol relieves that, is a solution to living in the world without God. We're separated from God, we're living on self, nothing works, we get full of resentment and fear, we harm people, and alcohol becomes a solution. And then it turns against us. To most of us at the end, it doesn't work anymore, right? And it says, besides we have stopped fighting anybody or anything, we have to. And remember, it says on page 61, we were fighting everybody and everyone. We were self-will run riot. And we don't want to fight everybody or anything anymore, do we? We want to be of service to them. We want to practice love and tolerance. And it says, we have to. Notice, we have to, exclamation point. We have to do this. And so I really like these pages. They mean a lot to me. I hope they've been helpful. We do have some time to open it up. And next time I'm going to bring in Copy Carry This Message. It's a book by Joe McHugh, the Joe and Charlie. And he has a whole chapter on carrying the message. It's really good. So I'll have copies of that. I'll bring it next week. Thank you, everybody.